welcome to an all-new episode of the McFuture Podcast. This is part two of the media intervention, where I talk about the new rules of media. Last week, I did the first six rules. This week, I do the next six, as well as a look towards the future. The other thing is, there's going to be a bonus episode for you right now on Patreon, where I go deep into the strategies of what will work and what will not work in media today. So if you're any kind of content producer, small or large, you're going to want to hear it. So let's jump right in. Rule number seven, beware of false prophets, because your saviors are your killers. I talked about all these different platforms starting to expand into different categories and threatening the companies that provide them content. Recent history is littered with examples of platforms sabotaging their partners, whether it's media providers or developers. Let's go through some of the more unlubricated screwings right now. When Amazon went into selling ebooks, they were setting prices in a way that publishers were not happy with. And they had lawsuits, they had all kinds of disputes. That was settled, but it's still this extremely uncomfortable relationship where Amazon is now competing with those publishers for new authors, and in some cases, established authors who have their built-in audience and just can go direct. Apple has a history with apps too, where if your app in any way competes with the functionality of an existing Apple app, you can't have it on the App Store. They'll just ban you, or they'll cripple you. They do this crazy thing with web browsers. So on Android and the Play Store, you can have all of these browsers like Firefox and Opera and all this other stuff. All they have to do is just be better than Chrome in some way, and you'll use it. Apple doesn't let that happen. What they do is they force all of the browsers that are on their platform to use some outdated engine while they exclusively use their new engine, the modern engine for browsing. So by definition, every browser on their platform has to be inferior to the Apple browser. Twitter has a similar history. They've screwed developers in the past. So before, all of these companies popped up and they were just using Twitter as a platform. So they would develop their own experience. They would go and market to get people to sign up to their apps and use their apps. And at some point, Twitter's like, oh, no, no, we're going to own the experience. So they pulled the plug on all of these third-party apps and all these companies that raised money, that invested in building out their user base. Gone, done, over. YouTube is doing that. They're demonetizing, which means you can't make money from your videos. They're demonetizing conservatives like Prager University. And of course, they're banning people like Alex Jones. Now, whatever your politics are, all of these entities built up an audience. They invested in building YouTube channels and creating content. So again, you build something on a platform and the platform screws you. Medium did the same thing to publishers that started publishing on its platform until it decided to be its own publisher. And it got rid of all the custom domain names. Anyway, there's this long history of people getting screwed. Google, oh my God, back in the day, Google search results had actual search results from all of these different companies and providers. They realized there were certain searches that people do all the time, like for restaurants, like for travel. And at some point, they just started replacing all of that other stuff with their own. So they bought a travel booking company. They basically started to compete with Yelp and put their own reviews front and center. And slowly, that first page that appears in the search results is all Google properties. Even now, BBC is pulling all of its podcasts off of Google because Google is directing people to their own podcast app through search results instead of to the BBC app. Look, Google's not obligated to promote other people's services, but because of their position as the dominant search player, there could be lawsuits, or there could certainly be an argument made for them using market power to be anti-competitive. Another type of technology that will kill you, but kill you in a different way, is all of these optimization platforms. There was a huge increase in ad tech, which is advertising technology that help you optimize your audience and find the exact right people that should be following you. It is the biggest waste of time ever. It's the same thing with e-commerce companies where you spend forever optimizing carts. Huge waste of time 90% of the time. It's like focusing on the parsley when you have no meat or potatoes. You're still going to die. You're just going to have a slight herbal flavor as you pass out. But it's like, I love analogies. It's like trying to get into a higher tax bracket by optimizing your credit card rewards points. It's not going to happen. It's like socialism without capitalism. You need to earn the money first in order to be able to distribute it. So you still have to create the value. And it's the same problem here. It steals your attention away from creating spectacular content that stands out and focusing you on nonsense. I would love for a CEO of any of these stupid ad tech platforms to contact me and give me all of their stats, and we will pick them apart one by one. I would love it. If you know someone like that, let me know. Have them email steve@ideafactory.com because I cannot wait. But this idea that you're going to optimize your way to success is ridiculous. You're wasting your time. Let those people abandon their carts. Let the people on the margins not read that article. Doesn't matter. If your stuff is good enough, you will find the people and the people will find you. Rule number 8. We are surrounded by zombies. There are a bunch of things that look alive, but are actually dead, and they just don't know it. So let's talk about all these walking corpses. So the first corpse, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, is the mass market. The mass market is over. Yeah, everybody loved Raymond, but are they going to love Bill? No one is going to love Bill. He will die alone with his shitty, watered-down script. No one is looking for all those awful formulaic sitcoms that shrink in ratings every year. That's why they hung on to that horrible, what's that geek show? Nerd World? what is it called? Make Love to My Robot? No, what is it called? All right, Big Bang Theory. Oh my God, I know... People watch it, but I don't know how. It's like if people who didn't understand technology or comedy tried to make a show about both. But the point is, no one wants your awful sitcoms. The other reason the mass market is over, it's become nearly impossible to be interesting without being polarizing. Comedian T.J. Miller once said, and I thought this was a great quote, it's better to be polarizing than neutralizing. The competition is at a much higher level. There are way more channels. It's way harder to stand out. And you can't stand out pumping out something that pleases everybody. It's one of the reasons Saturday Night Live is so glaringly bad now. I always thought it was pretty bad, but now compared to what's possible, it just looks tame and lame. You have to be challenging. You have to be interesting. You have to get people's attention. But at the same time, we've got this new puritanism forming where people are, realistically, they're fake upset. They're not really upset. But that pushes people into niches. And in the bonus episode, I'm going to talk about some emerging niches where there's tons of opportunity. The other thing that's dead is virality. Content can't go viral anymore. Not really, maybe for a short burst, but because of the sheer volume, there's just no way things can stay viral for very long because another insane viral story is right around the corner. Hey, I got suicides, genocides, mass murders, explosions. What do I gotta do to get you into a brand new retweet today? Not only are the news cycles short, but everyone's receded into their own little bubble. I live in a world where the concept of hair braiding doesn't exist. You think I want to be reminded of when I had hair? And maybe people on Black Twitter, which is a real thing, live in a world where Game of Thrones doesn't exist. I can't imagine looking at a bunch of white people in old outfits brings back a lot of fond memories. It's not that easy anymore for things to jump from one person's bubble to another. Now even Facebook is talking about facilitating more private communication. So virality is dying. That means no more ice bucket challenge. No more leave Britney alone. No more chocolate rain. All of that is done. You might not even get planking. I mean, you'll still have idiots hurting themselves online, so don't you worry. But the rest of it, done. When more and more stuff goes private, it creates this incentive for more tracking of all your private communications. So your public persona goes away, but now they have to dig deep into your private one for marketers to reach you. There is a pattern that I've observed where you can still go viral and be successful, especially on an individual level. It's harder for brands because their content isn't that personal. Like every once in a while, you have like a Dove campaign that stirs a conversation. We love having conversations unless we disagree with people. But the formula that I've observed that still works is first you have to develop a deep body of work. I forgot her name, but there's this Asian young woman who was doing these makeup videos, and she eventually ended up launching her own makeup company. One day, views on her YouTube channel went from like a few hundred or maybe 1,000 to millions because some big celebrity gave her a boost and everyone descended on her. But because she had the depth of material, she became popular and was able to sustain it and build a whole consumer brand around it. There's other people who've done it maybe in more political ways, like Jordan Peterson, for example. He had a whole bunch of videos no one was watching on all of his philosophies from his clinical psychology practice. And then all of a sudden he does this thing in Canada where he protested. It was some like trans controversy. Anyway, that guy, because he had the depth of material, he became popular. But then the guy who got fired from Google for writing that memo about why women aren't in tech, like James Damore guy, he disappeared. Because he didn't have the depth of material, he had no communication skills, and that guy goes away. So this depth of material combined with doing something insane, short of murder or something illegal, and then capitalizing on it and getting those people on board, that's still a formula, but it's not very reliable and it's not very fast. And it may not even be that big, not in terms of corporate level virality. The other way to do it, and this is something I'm going to get into in the strategy episode in Patreon, is the idea of riding other people's virality. I think you need a very different approach to influencers than what companies are doing today. All right. Another thing that's dead, the third thing that's dead, is the written word. The percentage of people reading for personal interest every day has dropped to 19%. It used to be 29% in 2003. Pretty soon, intellectuals will be the only ones reading, just like rich people will be the only ones getting service by humans in restaurants. Everyone else will have either a robot or maybe just something frisbeed into your mouth from the kitchen. And all this utilitarian writing, that's going away too. Textbooks, sports, Thomas Friedman columns, they could all be written by AI. It's true, by the way. Tom Friedman's been dead for 12 years. All of his columns have been generated by an algorithm. I will retire tomorrow if I can't write an AI that can predict every Kanye lyric from now on and everything Bella Hadid will ever say from today until the day she dies of Botox poisoning. Realistically, reading is the broccoli of media. The reason people don't eat broccoli is not the price or the availability. It's because it's not delicious and salty and sugary and fatty like potato chips or cake. That's why no one eats it. And it's the same thing with books. It's not that there's no libraries. It's not that you don't know they exist or that there's great authors. That's not what you want to consume. You want to be entertained. You want to lay back. You want video and my gorgeous voice to wash over you. And I can't tell which is the cause and which is the consequence, but we're getting dumber. We're probably getting dumber partially because we're not reading, but also as we get dumber, reading becomes very much like science fiction. It's just not happening. The fourth zombie walking among us is everything that relies on Trump. There is a ton of media that has been rescued from life support just from the Trump candidacy. I was watching this podcast that became an HBO series called Pod Save America. I got to tell you, I lasted maybe 8 minutes. If you haven't seen it, first of all, don't. But if you have, it's basically this generic podcast, five millennials with more or less the same personality and opinion talking about Trump ad nauseum. And they're not that different from CNN and Fox and some of these other ones that were plummeting in ratings. When I say plummeting, they were maybe down to 300,000 viewers in prime time right before the Trump announcement and when he started making all those crazy headlines. They were on the verge of death. I mean, 300,000 viewers is not enough for a studio. Maybe it's enough for a microphone and an iPhone, and you could broadcast from Central Park. No one was sitting around waiting for news on TV. All this political stuff is going to disappear so fast once this level of political engagement starts to die down, and it will. People can't sustain this. They can't protest everything. They cannot be in this constant state of agitation. And by the way, New York Times and Washington Post, all of those new subscriptions that they had and all that amazing money that they drew in, that's going away. MSNBC, Fox News, CNN, all of their ratings gone. Even Facebook and YouTube, they've been benefiting from all of this volatility and agitation. Facebook knows that engagement really means aggravation. So they know that the stuff that aggravates you is going to get you to stay on the platform. I think last year, if I remember the number correctly, six of the 10 best-selling nonfiction books were all Trump-related. It's ridiculous. And there's this whole fake news industrial complex. And I don't mean like fake news, like what Trump calls fake news. I'm talking about like Daily Show and Samantha Bee and John Oliver and Jim Jefferies, Colbert and Seth Meyers and Jimmy Kimmel all have the same exact opinions and the same exact jokes. They have all been suckling the teat of the president. They are all dead. They are the walking dead. I go to a lot of comedy clubs, and there are so many hacks now that are just going for cheap applause lines where it's like, oh, I hate Trump. And everyone, ooh, amazing. I hate Trump too. And like me, there's no joke. There's nothing. It's really almost that bad. I'll give you an example. I went to see David Cross. In case you don't know who David Cross is, he's the bald guy, the never nude from Arrested Development. And, you know, he's done some funny stuff in the past. So I figured, all right, how bad could this be? So I went to Brooklyn to see him. No joke. And when I say no joke, I literally mean no joke. If you're a child, tune this off or jump forward a minute. He did a 15-minute routine on the violent raping and beating of Donald Trump in jail. And I got to tell you, I was disgusted by it. And I wasn't disgusted by the topic. I was disgusted by the lack of punchline and the total and utter disdain for my time. Like, this garbage would never survive in a real comedy club. You go to a real comedy club, he would have been raped and beaten by the audience if he tried to do this horrible, horrible material. It was just the worst. And yeah, for a bunch of hipsters in Brooklyn, it was fine because they were all the converted and they were just, oh my God, great, amazing, nothing funny. And so all this stuff that relies on Trump, it is gone. It is over. The fifth corpse that is walking among us is Hollywood itself. Hollywood is basically taking a number two pencil to a gunfight. When you look at companies like Netflix and all of the analytics they have and all of the resources that they're throwing at creating entertainment, there will come a time Spotify is going to be able to precisely identify the exact segments of music you enjoy. They will be able to at some point create new songs you will make into hits. And it's not just big data. the quality is there. The empowerment of creatives is there. Like Netflix already had 54 Emmy nominations in 2016, and they're pouring so much money into this content. And building platforms is really not Hollywood's forte. I know Disney is going after it, and I'm sure a lot of these other guys are either going to acquire or try to build their own. But they are at the mercy of digital. And digital money is like nothing Hollywood has seen. Hollywood's got pretty slim margins. Most of those movies don't make a profit. Shows are expensive to make. But these middlemen, they are attracting tens of billions of investment. They've got sometimes 10, 15 years of investors just tolerating them, building up audience, locking everybody in. Hollywood just can't match that. And we really are getting to that point where AI is going to be better than anything actors can do on stage. That guy, Peter Cushing, he died in 1994. They popped him into Rogue One, the Star Wars movie. I almost said Star Trek. And same thing with Princess Leia. Can you imagine every single one of us drops dead and our work is better than ever? What kind of industry is that? And Hollywood can benefit from it, but the people who are going to be calling the shots are going to be the tech companies. And at some point, you're not going to be leaving the house. And when it's all being delivered to you on your phone, on your TV, on all these set-top boxes, the sets are so thin, there's nothing to be, you can't even balance anything on top. You have to like stick it on the back or throw it on the bottom. But it's just not going in the analog direction where Hollywood's expertise lies. It's going digital. And the digital companies are going to skim all those sweet, sexy profits off the top. Another thing that's totally dead, but giant corporations won't let them die, are all of these undifferentiated startups that are totally late to the game. Pluto.tv, think of it as your cable system's menu, but filled with all the channels that you would never watch in a million years. That got acquired by Viacom, and now Viacom's trying to pump some of its content through. Then there was another one called Crackle. That's the one that originally had Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars show, where Jerry struggles to pretend he's interested in what his guests are saying. And CISO went out of business. They tried the comedy niche, which is a great niche, but it's just super expensive to get something like this going. Anyway, none of these networks are offering you enough of a reason to go there. Plus, it's drowning in commercials. You might have some poor people or college kids sitting there watching it, maybe because they're high off their ass, or for some reason they're sexually aroused by Jack Klugman. Either way, these aren't the customers advertisers want. And eventually, even Viacom is going to get sick of burning cash trying to chase them. There is one platform I'm kind of on the fence about, which is Luminary. Think of it as the Netflix of podcasts. They raised $100 million and gave it to Trevor Noah, not all of it to Trevor Noah, but they gave it to Russell Brand and a whole bunch of other celebrities to get them to create exclusive podcasts on their platform. In a world with tons of great podcasts, including this one, I don't know that Luminary is going to get great traction. Plus, $100 million? That's totally wasted on podcasting. That's like Warren Buffett, who lives in the same house he lived in when he was a kid. All those billions, give it to somebody who's going to throw a party where there's going to be naked people hanging off the walls. Another corpse among us, and I'm not going to spend any time on it because the fact that you're listening to me right now, you know that radio is dead. Yes, there's a few people maybe in trucks or maybe who have cars from the 60s or somehow people from Cuba that are picking up distant stations, but radio is so dead and it's been dead for a while. All the talent has moved away or they're doing podcasts or something else. The other zombie, and this is the last zombie on my list, display ads and clickbait. Years ago, I wrote this thing called Confessions of an Ad Blocker. I think it was almost 6 or 7 years ago. And finally, those chickens have come home to roost. That online display ad model is so dead. Most of the things that were being clicked on, 62% of the traffic were bots. No one was clicking on it. And there's Chinese click farms you can hire to write reviews, to do shares and likes. In fact, I'd like to take a moment to say mi hao to all of my Chinese friends that I paid for with my credit card for iTunes reviews. There's going to be some sites that can fool people for short periods of time, but once sponsors aren't seeing the results and no one's buying the stuff, all of the clickbait BS is gone. And plus, Facebook and these other social platforms, they've changed their algorithms. That stuff doesn't even surface to most people anymore. There's still a lot of people who are disappointing me. You know who you are? Any person who still clicks on the same article that's been written 40,000 times or more. 10 ways to be a better leader. How to become successful in your new job. Stop clicking on it. I am begging you to stop. You're making everything horrible. Why do you think sites like BuzzFeed, Mashable, Mike, Vice, all of these companies were either acquired at a fraction of what they were valued at, or they've had to lay off tons of people, and for good reason? What they do mostly sucks. And there are things, you know, BuzzFeed News occasionally has some good stuff, Vice News has some good stuff, but not at these valuations. They're nowhere near multi-billion dollar companies. They are news organizations, which take a lot of people, and if you're going to make good stuff, it's going to cost money. All of these ad-driven companies, they're not going to be able to optimize their way out of it. All this optimization is a waste of time, and it shows. These ad tech companies are going out of business, and the investment in those companies is plummeting. There is still opportunity in captivity. And I don't mean like, you know, great apes at the zoo. I'm talking about not so great apes going to work or on the subway, or you're in traffic and there's billboards. That is still working. I think the future version of that is some sort of advertising within games. And the more you could integrate those ads with the actual flow of the game, the more powerful it'll be. The other place companies still have some control is inside their apps, but it's not the ideal way to monetize your app. Speaking of which, rule number 9, experience is everything and friction is poison. We know the experience we want, and a lot of times it's illegal. Like 15 years ago, Napster was a big thing. You just type in the name of the song you want, and you download it. Now, if that wasn't a great signal to the industry, I don't know what would be. And yet, they took forever to pursue it, and it was up to Apple to monetize it. And of course, Apple then got disrupted by Spotify. But even now, there are all these pirate streaming sites that have everything. They don't care about, is this from NBC or ABC or whatever the network is. They have every single show organized by category, organized by season, by episode, with the ratings, with the description. That's what people want, minus the malware pop-ups and whatever else that's going to be installed on your computer. Like, yeah, at some point you're going to have to pay ransom to some Russian, but until then, you're getting every show. We know what people don't want. People don't want to launder all of their viewing decisions or entertainment decisions by first choosing which device or what platform or what network is it on. And finally, maybe mercifully, if you guess all the right permutations, you'll eventually get to the show you want. Also, friction increases resentment. In the rush to stop the inevitable, all these companies, they put up roadblocks. And the roadblocks only serve them. They don't serve the consumer. So silently, the consumer is building all this hate towards you. Perfect example is the cable companies. Every year, they raise rates. They add these stupid channels that you don't watch. Sports gets more expensive and the customer service gets worse. And the second something else appears, people are gone. They are gone because that resentment, it's silent but deadly. I read this article. I laughed pretty hard. It's called The Ultimate Cord Cutter Solution. You might never leave your home again. This guy wrote about his awesome cord cutter system. Your head would explode trying to do this. You would have to be on the geek squad. Like, if you don't have your own IT department, you will want to murder this guy. There's nothing ultimate about his solution. It's four clunky devices, a bunch of expensive subscriptions that end up being more expensive than cable. You didn't cut the cord. You asphyxiated with it. All of this stuff with cord cutting, yes, maybe you're saving a little bit of money if you're not super particular, but by the time you add HBO, Netflix, Amazon Prime, maybe some sports thing that you want to stream, you're paying more and you are suffering because now you've got five remotes and you don't know what's plugged into what. It's a mess. Cord cutting is BS. People hate cable companies so much, they would rather put up with all of that clutter than go back to an abusive ex. You don't want to do it. You're like, you know what? I'm going to stay with this person. I know they're mediocre looking and they're not that interesting, but they don't punch me. So I'm just going to be here. I remember I was a huge fan of radio. I used to listen to everything. To Howard Stern in the morning, conservative, liberal, sports. I wasn't even that into sports. I would listen to it. And they accelerated their own decline by adding 20 minutes of ads per hour. It was insane. And they would put these dumb rules. Oh, you got to give the weather 10 after. You got to give the time every 5 minutes. If you can't figure out the time or the weather while sitting in your car with the clock on the dashboard and a window to your left, you can't drive yourself to work. You need to drive yourself to therapy immediately. And the same thing with television. They started pumping in more and more commercials. Seinfeld and Cheers were close to 25 minutes long, or 24, something like that. Now shows are only 20 or 21 minutes. When they replay those shows, they speed them up. So they're like 5% faster and they speed up the credits or they cut out certain things. So the experience is ruined. And the same thing I talked about earlier with Forbes. I don't want people seeing some splash page and my articles being chopped up into multiple pages. That's not the experience I want. I am your Forbes. I don't need to be validated by anything else at this point. And if I do, I'm going to try to pick something that has the experience I want. The other thing that people do to ruin the experience are these native ads. It's basically ads that look like articles, and they're all horrible because it has to go through every PR and legal person at some giant corporation. By the time you see it, it just says the. Terrible. Now, there are ways to do it well. I'll talk more about this in the strategy episode. Same thing goes for these Instagram influencer accounts. People have this superficial relationship with them. If tomorrow every influencer got run over by a truck, you'd find 1,000 others. Like, I'm a LinkedIn influencer, which is, it's an unfortunate name now that the word has been cheapened so much. You know, really it depends on the way people engage with you. It's the difference between Kim Kardashian being famous for being famous or Malcolm Gladwell being famous because he's written great books. Both of them might be recognized on the street, but the person who comes up to Kim Kardashian will likelier be insane and also not mind that she is funded by dozens of brands at any given moment. Malcolm Gladwell, unfortunately, has to live up to a different standard with a considerably smaller ass. And there is this hunt for pockets of trust. And the experience that you have on your platform is part of it. I can control how many ads, if any, I put into this podcast. I can control the words I use. I can control the quality of the product. But once you take it out of my hands and I'm on some third-party platform, you're in their hands. I think there's a conditioning that happens when people experience stuff the way it should be experienced. They set a level of expectation. When people start watching enough shows without commercials, they're going to expect no commercials from the other companies. A lot of people, including myself, are at a point where I'd rather watch a worse show with no commercials than a better show with commercials. the rich are going to be able to buy their way out of the crappy experiences. They will be able to buy subscriptions. They'll be able to buy Apple News and Netflix and HBO. And poor people are either going to have to figure out how to pirate it or they're going to have to watch a bunch of ads and pay with their time, which is how, unfortunately, a lot of the world works. Even Netflix is not perfect. Netflix is doing a lot of manipulation in its own strategic interest. So, for example, what it decides to put in front of you, like Sandra Bullock, even though it may not be the thing you most want to see, it's a thing they paid a lot of money for and they're going to put in front of you. Also, they got rid of their rating system. So no more star ratings, so you can make better choices. So now you basically have to watch something to decide if it sucks. The other thing they did is, of course, substitute all their own content. So all of their high-cost stuff is being phased out or put deeper into their platform so you can't find it as easily. They're not even showing movie or series release dates. You start watching something and you're like, oh, why is Brad Pitt 15? And you realize that it's a show from the 90s. They don't want you to know they have a bunch of old content and you're out of new shows to watch. They want everything to seem fresh. It's all manipulation. And for now, it's good enough. I suspect what will happen to Netflix is what happens to a lot of companies. They're going to try to squeeze more money out of their customers. And in doing so, ruin the experience and open the door to resentment and then competition. I already saw an article the other day how industry experts, whoever they may be, are saying that Netflix isn't going to be able to avoid commercials. The second that they do, that's when the door creaks open. Rule number 10, you have to stand for something. I'm just going to assume that quality is a given. It's just very difficult to look genuine doing it. Every once in a while, you'll see one of these Dove campaigns where it's like this feel-good moment where, oh my God, everyone is beautiful. Everyone is beautiful. Except you need an uncritical mind to process it that way. This is difficult to execute at a brand level because it's extremely manipulative. It just comes off as marketing BS. Whatever you do has to be backed by dollars. It has to move the needle, or at the very least, it has to hurt you. It has to be clear that what you're doing is a sacrifice, because if it isn't, it doesn't matter. And at some point, some blogger will get some clicks pointing it out. If you're going to stand for something, it has to be tied to an individual. It has to have a face, because people can relate to individuals much better. And that face really has to be accountable in one of those meaningful ways that I mentioned. The thing that doesn't work when it comes to standing for something is all this groupthink stuff. You can mob and guilt people and do all this public posturing. But if something sucks, there's no amount of guilt or social justice or any of that stuff that can make people watch it. That content has to be spectacular all on its own. It can't be untruthful at its core. You can't tell me, oh, you're beautiful, Steve. You're redefining the meaning of beauty. I will punch you because I know you're lying and it's condescending. And long term, I won't stand for it. And I won't stand for people who do tell me lies like that. And you can't sustain it. You just can't. What people say publicly these days is oftentimes posturing. They will tell you they're into all these causes and all these issues. But then look at their bank account. Look at the bank accounts and the tax filings of all of the presidential candidates that are running right now. They're averaging like 1% or 1.5% that they give to charity. So all of these causes and all of this emotion that they feel towards all of these injustices, they're not putting a single penny towards any of those things. That's the way people are. whatever they say, it's like survey data. People will answer with their aspirational selves. They're not going to tell you they watched a bunch of porn and fell asleep. They're going to tell you, oh, I watched National Geographic. I swear National Geographic just exists as a cover up for porn. Just so people can say, I have this channel and that's exactly what I watch, no matter what my web history says. There are a few companies that have done a really good job at this, which is creating an identity around their brand, their characters, and what they represent. HBO truly had a soul. Like, you look at these shows and you look at how empowered the artists who create them are. It's amazing. You know, it really is defining. But now that the company has been acquired by AT&T, the head of HBO left because they're trying to turn this thing, this artisanal thing, into a thing you pump out of a factory. But that's not how art works. And once you start puffing it up and scaling it up, it's going to be very hard to stand for something, especially for that type of quality. Netflix is trying to do similar stuff. Amazon is trying to do it. But HBO really nailed it. They are the artisanal cheese of entertainment. And I think the future is really aggregating people who have something to say. There's a couple of networks that are doing a pretty good job on the podcast side. Podcast One and also the original Nerdist Network were really good at taking people who have a built-in affinity and turning them into media and content creators. And of course, rule number 11 is everyone sells out. You will sell your nobility the second you get an offer you can't refuse. All that loyalty, all of that passion, all that branding, gone. Poof. You know how I know that? Look at startups. They talk about all of these idealistic things. They talk about disrupting industries. They talk about the horrible experiences consumers are having and how they're bringing you this new way of doing business that is so pro-consumer and pro-individual. 97% of the ones that raise venture money get bought. They get acquired. You know by who? The very same companies that they talked about disrupting. And they always intended to get bought. So there's a hefty amount of cynicism, or maybe denial in some cases, of what their reality is or will be. You look at the founders of WhatsApp and Instagram. These guys took billions of dollars from Facebook to get acquired. And then all of them huffed and puffed and marched out of the company because the company wanted to integrate platforms so they can put ads and collect data from across WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook, and all of this stuff. Of course they did. That was 1,000% foreseeable. Whatever these guys were told at the acquisition table, if it's not in writing, it didn't happen. And people don't get this. Corporations are not immoral and they're not moral. They're amoral. Their only morality is profit. And unless you change the rules of the game where profit isn't the only outcome they seek, that is exactly what they're going to pursue. And the second they can make more money by stuffing ads or collecting more data from WhatsApp or Instagram, they're going to do it. And how dare these guys assume any less? And I think it's a lie. There's no way. And yes, one of them left a bunch of money on the table, and that is worthy of some respect. But at the end of the day, what did you expect? You can't sell your baby and then complain how it's raised, even if you're the nanny. Bottom line is, if you sell out, they're the boss, you're the bitch. Sorry, that's how life works. And all due respect to Evan Spiegel. That's the guy who founded Snapchat. Not only is that guy married to a model and collecting, I guess, the spoils of victory, but he looked Mark Zuckerberg in the face, who was really going to put him out of business and has been trying. He's been trying to copy every single one of Snapchat's features and take all of that audience. He looked him in the eye and said no to a really lucrative offer and took his company public. I don't know if this was hubris, vision, or stubbornness. Whatever happens to Snapchat, That's worthy of respect, but also recognize how rare that is. Then you look at artists, you look at creative people. Kanye is running around begging brands to hire him, pay him millions so he can make his $600 t-shirts. Every single musician is sponsored. They're taking huge money from brands. Logos are plastered everywhere. They're doing special events and corporate events. They're not rebels. They're Revlon. And actors back in the day used to be ashamed of doing commercials. They'd do some like crazy commercial in Japan that no one would ever see. And now you walk down the street, you see A-listers like Charlize Theron and Brad Pitt plastered all over billboards, doing TV ads. Catherine Zeta-Jones was doing, I don't know, T-Mobile commercials. It's crazy how this world has changed. They have all commercialized. It's cool to show off who owns you. And by the way, even the people who at some point either held themselves up or were held up as rebels, they have a price. Ever wonder why we're not hearing from Colin Kaepernick? Whatever you may think of what his stance is, you know, whether you agree with it or not, it doesn't matter. What is 1000% true is we don't hear from him at all. You know why? Because he took his money. Because he took Nike's money. He took the NFL's money. Those are settlements that are done. So whatever he does, he has to adhere to what he sold out for. It's all in those contracts. We'll never see those contracts. We'll also never see Colin Kaepernick, certainly not in the capacity that we've known, at least not until all those deals expire at some point. Throughout history, you can maybe name 5 or 10 celebrities that truly took a stand that risked their careers. And I'm not talking about like retweeting some hashtag. I'm talking about something that jeopardizes how you earn a living. It's something that makes you hard to hire. Hard to hire. That would make a pretty good Steven Seagal movie. Coming straight to DVD. Hard to Hire, starring Steven Seagal. What? No more DVDs? Well, that's where it's going. So you better, Hard to Hire, Hard to Find, go get yourself a DVD player. That's where you're going to find Steven Seagal. Muhammad Ali, his stance against the war put him at odds with a big chunk of the population and a lot of the promoters and the boxing industry. Johnny Cash supported Native people. He almost killed his own career. There's probably a few other examples, but they're extremely rare. Everyone else has a price. At this point, any protests you see are going to be sanctioned by that person's bosses. So they're not really protests at all. I think deep down, way more people crave approval from the establishment than want to disrupt or overthrow it. I don't think anyone wants disruption. Power makes people want to have it or be near people who do. Tell a friend. Rule number 12, even the disruptors are doomed. Google and Facebook know better than anyone that even their days are numbered. It's just maybe further out into the future. But why do you think Facebook is consuming and acquiring all these other networks? They're sort of like Frogger jumping from one lily pad to the other. They're trying to stay ahead of diminishing returns. All that math I talked about in rule number one. This year, tons of people have stopped using Facebook. Their numbers for the first time are either shrinking or slowing down. And Twitter, that stopped growing years ago. Now it's just bots, Russian trolls, and a bunch of douchebags who won't shut up about politics. The world has changed and Facebook sees these numbers. That's why they're going into private messaging. And it's also why Google's investing in all these life extensions and automated driving, all this other stuff. They need our hands free so we could play with their junk. That didn't come out exactly as I'd hoped. That's why social media's next phase is so scary. It's going to give us everything we've ever wanted. The combination of virtual reality, augmented reality, artificial intelligence, and sensory connectivity, where we can actually not just see, but feel everything in these environments, it's going to consume every morsel of time it possibly can. And I'm not sure we're going to be able to resist it. Neither are the traditional companies that think they're fighting a media battle when they're not. They're competing for time and at some point, addiction. Let me finish by talking about the future. Not just the future we're going to get, but the future we need. There's a way to align our individual interests with the interests of these media companies. And the way to do it is through money. When politicians raise all this money from private companies and rich people, it would be downright irresponsible not to pay them back somehow. You're going to have to pass laws in their favor, give them tax breaks, give them contracts. After all, what kind of monster wouldn't take care of his own paying customers? That's how the world works. And it's the same exact thing in media. You think it's any different when you use a platform for free and a bunch of advertisers pay real money? Of course they're going to get their way. Of course they're going to get your data. Of course they're the ones who are going to be served, not us. We have to become the consumers. There is no other way. And in the bonus episode, I'm going to talk about exactly how that realignment might happen. But assuming we can do it, we still need to evolve to something different. We still need to transition from a world where you have to pump things out constantly to a world where everyone only says something when they have something to say. There's a huge difference between creating because you want to or because you have to. When you have to do it, you get a very different kind of product. It's the difference between factory farm chicken and a pheasant you killed hunting with Dick Cheney. People like Larry David and Louis before his problems, they were able to create when they wanted to. Now, they earned themselves the right to do it because of their popularity and the popularity of their products. They were able to come to the table with something fully formed when they were ready. Same thing with Arrested Development. Their audience hung around for over a decade to see a sequel. People will wait for great creators. And unfortunately, HBO, which had that philosophy, is now headed in the opposite direction. They're heading towards factory farm chicken. Disney did the same thing when they acquired Lucasfilm. They pumped out one Star Wars movie after the other. That's not the direction we need to be going. The people who are consuming it aren't looking for volume. They're looking for quality. And the only way to get it is to exit this three-party system and go to a two-party system. I'll get more specific in the bonus episode. And this cycle, daily, 24 episodes, all this clickbait is actually killing creators. Maybe not literally, but people on YouTube, writers, all of these people have this unbelievable angst from the proliferation, from the fact that they have to pump all this stuff out, especially when it's click-driven, especially when it's ad-driven, especially when algorithms make the decisions. Not only does the quality suffer, but they suffer. There are ways to prevent burnout, and we'll talk about some of those systems on the bonus episode. But the last thing I want to mention, I don't know if it's a profound thought, I'll leave that to you to decide, is we're doing something inherently dangerous right now. And maybe I'm over-dramatizing it because I'm a little bit of a drama queen. But in our system, we're primarily rewarding outcomes, right? No matter what the content is, we're going to tell you, hey, if you got this many clicks or this many subscribers or this many viewers or this much in ad revenue, you're going to get compensated based on your performance. On the surface, that is the most capitalistic thing you could do. Awesome. Listen, Ronald Reagan, boner, get it. Amazing. However, there's something to be said for rewarding input. Let's talk about this podcast, for example. And this whole thing, it turns out, was just an elaborate ruse for me to talk about myself. Me. Anyway, the reality is this episode takes way more time to create and produce and research than a bunch of other stuff I could do. In fact, I don't even have to be doing content. There's a bunch of stuff I could do that's way more lucrative. But is this valuable? Are you entertained? Are you enjoying it? But what if I could do just as well, get just as many clicks or more clicks by just talking with some friend of mine or just shooting the shit? Why would I go through all this, do all this research, convey something profound when I can get as much or a bigger reward doing something stupid? Which I'm not above. I'm just saying you would not get nearly as much value. I was listening to this other podcast. I don't remember the details right now, but there's this woman who creates this elaborate podcast. She writes a script. She hires actors. There's this elaborate production. She pays for music licensing. And she only puts out this 30-minute episode once every, 2 weeks or something. This thing is incredibly expensive, but it's also high quality. But why would she keep doing it if some easier path is out there for her? I don't think these incentives are serving us well. Medium is another place where they're basically saying to their writers, you know, we're going to give you a percentage of the monthly fee based on how many views you get. But how did you get those views? Did you write something deep and insightful or well-researched? Or did you just poop out some opinion piece? Same thing is playing out on Apple's platform. The things we need are being decimated in a tsunami of the things we want. It's like walking into a supermarket that has one piece of broccoli and everything else is M&Ms. Good luck finding the broccoli. Or that bar of soap in the shower lost in the abyss of your fleshy folds. This disincentivizes journalism. And journalism is important for keeping corruption at bay. And it takes months of research, getting sources, insider information, and going through documents to produce a high-quality journalistic piece. And what if that thing gets like 1,000 clicks? And then you've got Kim Kardashian, shows her titties, 100 million views. Guess what happens over time? Way more titties than investigative journalism. And this is not some half-baked theory. This is actually happening right now. Newspapers throughout the country, I think like 2,500, have closed down. Without that local information, people are turning to these national sources, which are super divisive, that could not give a crap about them and completely irrelevant to them. They have kids who have to go to school. They have roads that have to be cleaned. They have air and water that needs to be purified. They have corruption happening all around them with local officials. And they'll never know about any of it because there's no economic incentive for the production side, only for the output side. So we are screwing ourselves into idiocracy. We live in a world where it takes just as long to watch The Real Housewives of Orange County as it does to watch The Cosmos. But what if Cosmos costs twice as much to produce? If that's the same company, guess which choice they're going to make? Same thing on Spotify. The guy who makes the remixes with everyone else's material gets the same compensation as the person who writes original pieces that took months to produce. What if I ran a sales competition? I said, hey, whoever sells the most wins. And you're like, well, what product? Any product. Doesn't matter. Any product, whatever sells the most wins. Guess what you're going to do? You might sell the dirty bomb if you think you can get the highest reward for it. And then what if I said, okay, let's use profit instead. Okay, you're going to take cost into consideration, but you're not going to take benefit into consideration. So you might sell something that has a high margin, but it could have a detrimental effect on society. Sort of like plastic. It's super high margin, and now we have an ocean full of turtles in ShopRite bags. And if we keep rewarding the consumption side and not the production side, we incentivize shallower and shallower content to be produced. and in the process, make society dumber because that's all that's available to consume. We are building our idiocracy. So what we need is to reframe what people are buying. Are you buying articles, or are we supporting a greater mission, an organization, or of journalism itself, or things that are deep and profound and informative and necessary, as opposed to things that are just delicious and nummy that'll eventually get us killed or make us really, really stupid? And third-party platforms, they're accelerating all this because they're a capitalistic machine. And I'm not saying that is a bad thing. I'm a capitalist. But what they're optimized for is delivering these little morsels of media. They just care about how many of them you consume. What's in it almost doesn't matter. The only time they care is when there's some political blow up or a public outcry, and they'll make some cosmetic adjustments and then shut up and click, bitch. I think I might have just accidentally stumbled across some of the dirty talk that happens at the Zuckerberg household. Click on this, bitch. I'm pretty sure Zuck's on the bottom for that one. Oh, God. All right, people, it's time to get serious. We need to redefine what's truly contributing and what isn't. And that means tamping down this allure of media. And it's not easy. They've done surveys where kids are asked, what do you want to be? And they say popular or celebrities. They don't want to tell you what it is they want to do to achieve celebrity. They think celebrity is the end point rather than the byproduct of something great that you've done. All of our incentives are screwed up. The people who are the loudest and who say the most controversial things, they get rewarded. That sets an example for everyone else to go, hey, look at these people getting rewarded. I'm going to say some crazy stuff too. It's so pervasive because we live in a world where it's harder and harder to show value because the world doesn't require that much of us. So we need to peacock our value around even if there's no value to peacock. So media is the value. Media is the identity. What you present, not what you contribute, becomes what you are. So we're all rocketing towards peak Kardashian, where the packaging is more valuable than the product inside. And on the bonus episode, I'm going to get into ways to realign those interests, where we can start seeing that world for what it really is becoming. I'm Steve Factor. That's it for this episode of The McFuture. Don't forget, there's a bonus episode right now on strategies, whether you're a tiny content creator or a multimedia monolith. You're going to want to hear this episode. It's got everything, all the strategies you need to make your content successful. So support the Patreon, review the show, share it with others. See you next time on The McFuture.